Welcome to the Driving Eureka podcast, where we share ideas and advice for helping you find, filter, and fast track big ideas. Let's go! Hi, I'm Trip Babbitt, advisor to global organizations on the Deming philosophy and host of the Deming Institute podcast.
And I'm Doug Hall, inventor, speaker, teacher, and whiskey maker. I'm also the founder of the Eureka Ranch and author of the Driving Eureka book.
This is episode number 23 of the Driving Eureka podcast. And this episode, we're going to talk about failing fearlessly. So, Doug, you've written this newsletter. It's quite a bit different than what we've seen in the past. What are you doing?
Okay, I figured it was a labor-saving device, okay? I've got to do this commencement address for a university. I'm speaking to the graduate school is doing a commencement, and they've asked me to do it. And I had spoken at the university before to the undergraduates, and now I'm doing the graduate students. And I'm stressing out because they're like, well, we got to see what your talk is and all this. And I'm like, oh, my God. Then I thought, wait a minute. I got an idea. I'll write it up, a first draft, and then I'll like do it in the podcast and get Trip's help with it and get listeners' help with it. So to improve it, it's kind of like doing what we talk. You know, we talk about fail fast, fail cheap, cycles of learning. It's like a labor-saving device. You know, what would you say if you were standing in front of a bunch of people that were getting their doctorate and their master's that, you know, which, you know, their interest in you is somewhere around none, you know. They want the certificate and the party afterwards, right? And you're trying to say something in a short period of time that's meaningful. And so when I did it the last time, it was pretty stressful. And so you're trying to say something. And I figured, hey, what a great way to practice.
Okay. All right. Well, let's give it a shot.
Okay. So I'm going to go through and I'm going to, you know, I'll stop a couple of times and we'll talk about it. And I've got my pen here, so I'll scribble down my notes on thoughts that we've got and we'll go from there. Okay.
Okay.
Here we go. Okay. So imagine the scene, you know, pompous, overdone, you know, wearing those funky hats and, you know, gowns and all of that stuff. And, you know, the president, the chancellor, blah, 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 pontificating and all this stuff. And then we say, we have this guy here who's a whiskey maker and inventor who's going to talk. And I say, thank you to God, motherhood, and all of the distinguished foo-foos on the stage, you know, because that's the kind of stuff you're supposed to say, right? And I say, you know, so here's how it starts, right? Here we go. Family and friends, before us is a very special group of people. To be awarded an advanced degree requires that the candidate, formally or informally, make an original contribution to the world's knowledge. These amazing people before you are explorers and adventurers. They have demonstrated the courage to push the boundaries of human knowledge. Let us recognize their courage. Yay! Cheer thing? Okay. Now, I'd like to thank the university for giving me the opportunity for a do-over. You see, I spoke at the 2008 commencement, and there I urged graduates to declare independence, to declare their independence from baby boomer conformity. I urged them to think for themselves and to not sell out their values as many from my 60s generation have done. Okay, Trip, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think of the opening?
You know, it's funny. I wrote down a couple things within the introduction, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, if I'm the audience, first of all, I want to, and especially the setup that you said, they're looking forward to the after party. They want to be entertained and they want something different than what's going to be expected. And everything that I've learned about narrative is kind of in a format of and, but, and therefore. So you kind of end a little bit at the beginning, but, you know, it's going to be different than 2008. Therefore, and that's now what I'm expecting. That would be my comment at this point.
Okay, so you're waiting for something profound.
Yes. Now I'm waiting. Oh. Okay, give me
oh,
the...
Oh, man. Okay, it's okay. Here we go. Okay. Over the past few months, I've reflected on that speech and concluded that I made a mistake. Today, I correct it. is a drum roll now. I guess this will be the time.
Okay.
Fellow graduates, instead of simply encouraging you to think for yourself, I challenge you to go forth and fail fearlessly. Yes, I said fail fearlessly. It is only by learning to love failure that you can achieve great things. It's as basic as the scientific method that you embraced on your journey to this day. It's as fundamental as Dr. Deming's theory of knowledge, plan, do, study, act. It is how we learn everything. It's how we learn to ride a bike. We try, we fail, we learn, we try again. It's how we learn to read, to write, and to invent amazing solutions to the challenges the world faces. Okay. What do you think?
That follows up. It's funny. I'm preparing actually for an interview with somebody that does kind of neuro-linguistic programming stuff. And one of the things they talk about is fear. And in that, they say that to mitigate fear, you have to have safety, belonging, and doing something really that matters or mattering in the universe. And so I'm kind of, as you're reading through this, I'm kind of checking the boxes in my head. How do I get safety yet fail fearlessly? That's the question that's coming up in my head, at least right now.
Okay. Well, let's keep going.
Okay.
2019 graduates, you have been given a special gift as a result of your persistence, grit, and importantly, the support of your family, friends, and the university community. Now is not the time to become academically retired in place. Now is not the time to become prudent, proper, and puckered. I think there's a laugh there at that point somewhere. Hopefully. Now is the time to become an expert at failing fearlessly. Now is the time to use your degree as your license to fail. I thought that was kind of good. What do you think? License to fail? You know, the degree?
Yeah. That's the way maybe we should look at it. I think a lot of people, as you have pointed out, look to it as a more of a safety net, though, as opposed to a license to fail.
Oh, yeah, I can see what you're saying. I'm thinking that might be the line they remember. I now have a license to fail. Mm. I mean, I could see my dad hearing the talk and saying to me, bless him, he's passed, but he would say, well, I guess you have a license to fail now. You have a degree that allows you to do that. I mean, I can see him thinking that way in his warped sense of humor. Use your success that we acknowledge today as a platform for teaching the naysayers, the insecure, and the mental scaredy cats of this world about how failure is the foundation for greatness. To paraphrase Dr. Deming, how could they know? How could they know? How could they know the value of failing if they've never traveled the journey that you, my friends, have traveled in your journey to this day? On campus, you live in a community committed to learning. As you go forth to the real world, that will not always be the case. To help you, I offer you three simple lessons I've learned. Number one, fail fast, fail cheap. Use your creative abilities to find ways to do rapid and cost-effective experimentation. Two, think big. Focus your efforts on projects that are bold and have the potential to make a meaningful difference in the world. And number three, embrace the crazy. They don't give patents to people who are prudent. If your idea is an obvious leap by those with skill in the art, your patent application is rejected. They only give patents to the crazy ones. Author Stephen King, a man who knows a little bit about fear, feels that within all of us is healthy craziness. Stephen wrote, I think that we're all, in fact, mentally ill. Those of us outside the asylums only hide it a little better. And maybe not all that much better after all. So I'll stop there. What do you think?
Okay, so now you're kind of giving me a method to be able to apply these things. I definitely think, you know, it's going to be hard, difficult in a commencement speech to be able to give them all the tools, but you've roused their curiosity, I think, at this point. Okay, well, did I have this? And maybe they've already had some of this in their graduate studies. I don't know the school, so.
Yeah. Okay, so then I'm going to close. So you know, I'm not preaching without practicing. My team set out to invent a way to accelerate the aging of whiskey. In one crazed week, we failed 72 times in 7 days. We made horrible, horrible whiskey. And with each failure, we got smarter and smarter. Then one morning, we connected the dots, experiment 13, experiment 30, and 70. And we had what we had discovered is a way to transform the space-time continuum for whiskey aging. Double gold medals and market success followed. And it was all because of a courage to fail fearlessly. Without failure, there will be no learning. As Ben Franklin wrote, up sluggard and waste not life. In the grave will be sleeping enough. Deep inside all of us is a magical curiosity, a curiosity that fuels our courage to fail, learn, and fail again. In closing, in recognition of your courage and in the memory of my family's graduates of this great university, my grandmother, mother, father, brother, sister, son, nephew, and niece, Jill, who graduates tomorrow, I drink a toast with our Brain Brew whiskey. I drink to the college of our hearts always. And I will raise a glass. Probably the only one who's ever drank at a commencement. Well, maybe not. There's usually a few flasks out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we were drinking actually at my commencement. But anyway, one thing I was going to just say that really stands out from my perspective that I'd like to see added to this is when in here where you're talking about crazed week, we failed 72 times in 7 days. We made horrible, horrible whiskey. And I wrote down immediately after you said that, just from our previous conversations, on purpose. That you pushed the limits, that you, it wasn't by accident, you were actually pushing the limits out there.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was just when you said that, it just popped in my head immediately just from our previous conversation. So, but no, I like it. It has a very good ABT format. It's got something there. It's got practical application of how you've done it. I like the, I don't know if this is just a skeleton at this point or
yeah. You're no, this is it. To it. This okay. is it. That's okay. it.
And yeah, then everybody can go drinking. And so this is almost like the Gettysburg Address.
Well, they have to be short at these things because you got the people to do. You can go a little longer, I think, at graduate schools because they're smaller. But when you're doing the universities with thousands of graduates, they really, I mean, it's like precision. You have to be short. And I've been very blessed. This university has given me an honorary doctorate. I've gotten a couple of those. So I'm not worthy of any of these things. But I guess I must have entertained them enough the last time. But the you know, it's an interesting thing doing a commencement. And a good friend, I asked him advice. He says, say what you would want your kids to hear if they were graduating. And so last time it was all about Declaration of Independence from Baby Boomer Conformity. Don't do, but I mean, this was 10 years ago. Don't do what your parents would do. Do your own thing. You know, be yourself. You know, don't be like our generation who started out in the 60s caring about the environment and now it's a political hot potato. You know, how the frig did that happen, man? You know, and, you know, it's just, you know, generations. And some people say that's always going to happen. But the human condition is a hope that the idealism of youth will not totally be lost. You know, that people will do it. And I do feel like that, just that independence, it was a reaction against what was going on as opposed to what to do. And, you know, listeners to this podcast, readers of my books, this concept, you know, I write about how to create ideas and how to face fear. I mean, that's it. Courage and creativity. That's all I know. That's all I write about. 7 books on creativity and courage, you know, whether it's the North Pole or whatever. There's only 2 subjects that I know. And so we return to it a lot. And I don't know, there's something about this concept. You know, what you're hoping for, former Governor Kenneth Curtis spoke at my graduation a long time ago. And I have no idea what he talked about. I've tried to look it up on the internet and I never could find much of anything on it. You know, you hope as a commencement speaker that you reach somebody somewhere. So anybody out there who's got a thought, please send it to me. You can email me at DougHall@DougHall.com. DougHall@DougHall.com. Just send me any advice and suggestions. They are all welcome. Because these are stressful when you do these, because they're expecting you to do something of significance. So.
No, very good. I think people will be entertained, and it's like you said, a lot of these commitment speeches can go on and on and on, and I think this gets to the point very quickly. It's time now for the Driving Eureka book segment with author and inventor Doug Hall. Well, let's move to our Driving Eureka book segment, and we continue on this theme, Small Steps to Build Courage using PDSA.
Yeah, so, you know, we want to do big ideas, but it's that first step that's the hard step. And people tend to look at the mountain and go, my God, how am I going to do this? Well, you know, you have to take it a step at a time. And I had the good fortune, I was at Canyon Ranch, and Robert Maurer, author of the book One Small Step Can Change Your Life, The Kaizen Way, was a guest of Canyon Ranch. And I got to hear him talk, and I got his book. And he's about the cycles. And he writes, all changes, even positive ones, are scary. Attempts to reach goals through radical or revolutionary means often fail because they heighten fear. But the small steps of Kaizen disarm the brain's fear response, stimulating rational thought. And I, in the book excerpt that's in the newsletter, I talked about, you know, plan, do, study, act, these cycles of learning. Through these, our confidence and courage grow. And it's not about throwing stuff against the wall. It is about, you know, disciplined steps of learning. And so whether it's the way we make the whiskey, whether it's the way we approach projects, you know, yeah, the first 50 times, it's probably going to mess up, probably 100 times. But if the mission is worthy and you're disciplined about it and you study and you look back and look at them, that's how you do it. The problem is getting people to do the first one because they want to sit there and figure the whole thing out before they even begin. Well, that's not going to happen. Not going to happen.
Yeah, I think, you know, and that's one of the things I learned from going to the innovation engineering classes is I didn't have a method. I didn't have a way to break it down as I would other things. So, you know, if I was consulting with someone on their organizational structure, I knew how to break that down. I knew what steps to take, you know, one by one in small chunks to be able to kind of move them through to what a new structure might do for them and actually test it. I mean, you know, being able to test that structure. I didn't have a method. I think people sometimes, you know, they're looking for the one thing, as you've mentioned before, as far as the big idea, hopefully that will, you know, drive it through. But it's really what you've done in innovation engineering is break it into smaller steps for people to be able to grasp the concepts of really innovation.
Yeah, for some people this is natural. They can see those steps and they can do it. But for most people it's not. And that's where the classes and the lessons, whether it's the online class or live, and the software that makes it methodical, makes it, you know, and it almost seems like contradiction terms. Innovation, logical. Well, yeah, discovery is. I mean, it's a scientific method, folks. I mean, this is not, there's no great discovery. Ding! No. This is the fundamental. This is how science happens. This is how new things are discovered. And whether you're discovering a cure for cancer or you're working to discover a cure for, you know, your business challenge or your nonprofit challenge or your life challenge, there's a methodical approach. And people have just not been shown that. I spent the weekend with Kevin Cahill, the grandson of Dr. Deming and the executive director of the Deming Institute, which if you go to deming.org, you can learn a lot more about it. And we had some incredible conversations about Dr. Deming and his teaching. And he was showing me, they've got this new online class that they're in the process of developing it. So I got to see one of the first prototypes. And I said to him, I said, Kevin, you know what you've got here? What Deming really was doing was teaching us problem solving. And we stopped for a second because all of a sudden I realized what I'd said. And I said, this, we tend to think of this Plan, Do, Study, Act as this other thing. But what it really is, it's how to solve the problems of life. That's it. That's what it is. It's the simplest, most effective problem-solving system on earth. And whether it's the way we teach it or the Institute teaches it, which is the same, and we are beholden to them for all of their help, that's what it's about. But we don't have that system, and we're not taught that in school. We're not taught that. Unless you go to a school where they teach innovation engineering, of course. Cheap plug, but you know how it is.
So as I'm listening to you talk about, from a problem solving standpoint, it takes me back to, and we maybe touched upon this in an earlier episode, but it takes me back to Frederick Taylor and his method for problem solving, and really what was referenced as Taylorism as being the method that was used. But Taylorism has now been basically just modified to Neo-Taylorism. So we're still not using the problem solving of PDSA of Dr. Deming's thinking. It's still stuck in something from really the early 1900s. You have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, we've gone from a world of command and control to empowering workers to back to command and control again. And the worker, we hire these people because of their creativity. We say, I want creativity, problem solving. I want entrepreneurial people. And then we ask them to just do what we tell them to do. It's like, why'd you bother, man? Why'd you bother? I mean, I was just going through that. With BrainBrew, we've got a few investors that we've got. And I reach out to them every single week. I give them things I need help on. And I was talking to one of the investors. He says, Doug, I've got a bunch of investments. I have none like you. You just are endless in asking for my help. They said, and frankly, I don't know how you do it because I can't keep up. It's only once a week you ask me for help, but I can't keep up and I feel really bad. And he says, none of the other investments that I have, do they ask me for help? None. He said, why do you do it? I said, well, yes, your investment was helpful, but the reason I selected you, because I was fortunate I could turn down other people, was because I thought you were a smart person and I wanted your help. So why would I recruit you because you can help me and then not listen to you? That would appear to be stupid. And it appears that most managers are stupid. They hire smart people who think differently, and then they try to get them to think like themselves. Well, what the F? Come on, people. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think that's the burden of consulting in general. You find out a lot of times when people hire you in, they just want you to affirm what they're doing as opposed to actually improving what they're doing. they want reinforcement. Look how great you are, type of thing. I said, if you wanted me to do that, we could have made this a very short conversation at the very beginning,
Well, there's an executive vice president at one of the biggest banks in the world. He said, Doug Hall is a royal pain. I mean, he is just absolutely obnoxious. The problem is he's right, and he tells the truth. And I'm like, whoa, that's good, I guess. I didn't mean to be obnoxious, but that's how I've been in this business for 40 years. You tell the truth, politely. That's the key, politely. But, you educate and you speak the truth, because the minute you stop speaking the truth, your value is lost and your soul is gone.
That's true.
Reason I'm still in it. Yeah. Most of the people who were doing innovation, whether it's innovation education or inventing work for clients, are just gone. They're just gone. Another one bites the dust. Another friend just retired. He says, it's beyond me now. And I'm like, oh, man, you guys are killing me, man. Stay in the game. But they do. they just give up, because part of it is they lost their integrity at some point along the way. Mm. And so now it's just horrible. But when you're doing meaningful stuff in meaningful ways, and you, there are clients out there who really want help. We'll talk about it next week. I'm going to talk about this, the difference between bartenders and mixologists.
Okay.
Well, that would speak to this. We'll talk about that next week, but, there is a difference in how you approach this. And that's how I'm still having more fun 40 years later. I'm still having fun with it, which is amazing. Most people are burnt out long ago.
Or searching for new ways to try and tell the truth, you know, that resonates. And
I don't know that that's the case. I think they give up mostly.
Yeah. Okay.
I'd like to think that they did, but most of them just give up. That's right. My generation, at least.
This is the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy podcast, where we will take you behind the scenes so you can see what it takes to build a whiskey distillery business. The Eureka Ranch team, led by Doug Hall, are creating a craft whiskey company with patented technology like has never been done before. Okay, well, let's move to our Brain Brew Whiskey Academy. The Wonder of Failure. So you've attended a American Distilling Institute conference in Denver. Tell me about that experience.
Well, it was fun. About 2,000 people, about 90% of which are not in the spirits business or whiskey business. They're trying to decide if they want to get into it. So a lot of newbies that are there. But there were a few people who had done it. And I got to spend some time maybe having a wee dram with some of those folks.
At a distilling conference? I'm shocked.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. And it was interesting because you got the newbies who are sitting there nervous, trying, you know, scribbling down every single piece, you know, trying to get every little detail so that in case they're going to miss something, and not realizing it's not, you know, you just got to get in and you know, just keep swimming, as the movie says. you got to get into the game. You know, you know, sitting on the sidelines, you can't figure out what it's like until you get into it. And that's, frankly, I'll tell you, one of the challenges. And I'm going to make a plug. I'm going to make a big plug here for somebody. One of the great challenges people have is, you know, brewers have been able to do, you know, home brew and learn their way to get ready to get going. And distillers have had a very hard time with that, because to really do distilling, I mean, unless you're doing moonshining, and the time it takes to age, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's just, you have to get in before you can learn much. There's a company called iStill, and anybody listening to it, I'm going to give you my strongest recommendation, and that includes here in the U.S., also one of the most respected whiskey makers in Scotland, a top-notch person from the very top companies, told me the only still to buy is an iStill. It's a computer-controlled system, but what's most impressive is they have an iStill Mini that's only like 4 liters or something like that, a little tiny thing that actually fits in a roller board that you can check on a plane. Like it's a little tiny thing. And so you can do your batches, you can find your cut points and you can work with it. But iStill is the only way to go. Only way. And they have amazing courses that you can take. Hmm. If you're thinking of getting into the spirits business, to make your gin and vodka, I would use an iStill. To make your whiskey, work with Brain Brew. I mean, we'll help you with the whiskey part. But to get there, go in that way, because that's where you're going to really do something amazing.
Okay. So you don't have one of these, though.
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do? So,
yes,
so,
I do.
All right.
Yes,
and so I'm still grasping the concept of it. The iStill does things in smaller batches?
It does very small, fast runs.
Okay.
So that means you can run a lot. You know, we talk about fail fast, fail cheap. Yep. It's the system for fail fast, fail cheap. And like we can make whiskey in our time machines in 40 minutes. So too can you make batches of distilling batches and run some experiments much faster with this. So they're awesome. They are absolutely awesome. The owner's incredible. The team is just awesome. It's the only way to go. Okay. I still.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I was at the conference, I got to talk to a bunch of these people, and you know, a couple of drams as you go along, you start talking about failures and things that didn't work. And you know, one of the distillers is telling me the story about how he'd kind of messed up some stuff he was doing, and he had a small fire in the distillery.
Oh, jeez.
Disaster. Disaster. There might have been a small explosion. Yeah, just a small one. But if they cleaned it up, and he discovers, like, I don't know, what he said, 3 to 5 bottles. Just a very tiny amount of liquid was in one of the vessels there. And he tastes it and he goes, damn, that's pretty good. So he bottles it up. And he submits it to a competition and wins top prize.
Oh, no.
And then he's like, awkward. How many bottles are they? Just the 3 I sent you.
Yeah, how do you recreate that?
So then he's sitting there going, okay, now how do I make it again without having this small fire? But the thing is that he was laughing about it, you know? And other people started telling stories of epic failures. And there were some newbies around looking in awe as, you know, they're worried about that they're going to mess up. And we're just talking about our screw-ups all the time. And it's, I don't know. If you're not comfortable with failing, don't bother to start a distillery. Just don't start. Don't tell me that you know everything because you're an executive or foo-foo. Just get over yourself. This is a live and dynamic process, okay? When you're making whiskey, consumers are fickle. You have a 95% failure rate. Everything fails. That's not the question. It'll all fail. The question is, do you pivot? Do you change? Do you learn from that? Do you make it right? And it was interesting because I was thinking of Paul Shirky when I went to the North Pole. He's one of the greatest. He spent more nights sleeping below zero than anybody else, they say. I don't know how you figure out a rule like that. But so he's gone to the pole a whole bunch of times by dog sled and ski, the Admiral Perry way. And I asked him, I said, why do you go to the North Pole? This is as we're getting ready for the trip. But he says, because it feels so good when you stop. Now as I'm getting ready to go to the pole with him, I'm thinking, what kind of nutcase am I traveling with? But he was right, you know, and it's the same with a distillery. You go through the ups, the downs, the failures, but you survive. You survive. Mm. Sometimes you make the pole, sometimes you don't. But whether you make it or not, you sit down and man, it's like, damn it. You know, I pushed myself. I did it. I did something. I put myself out there versus those people that sit on the couch and go, geez, yeah, looks pretty tough to me. You know, not going to do anything. Get up, get out, get going.
So, Doug, one of the things that I'm curious, just from your experience, as you talk about whiskey and you talk about, you know, going to the North Pole type of thing, are businesses, I mean, they all should be failing, right? I mean, isn't that, or do you see different scales associated a bank versus a whiskey company? In other words, that you should be failing more because of the nature of the business.
No, it's humans, life, everybody. If you perfection is highly overrated, you need it. If it's obvious and you can get it, then you haven't done anything worth doing. Stretch yourself, push the edges. You know, whenever anybody says they're okay with fear, I know they're not. Mm. You know, I mean, it's just how it happens. It's how learning happens. Demi said theory of knowledge. It's how it happens. Failure is part of the system. When people say, oh, you know, we're not really good with failure here. Well, then you're stupid and you're going to die. Because, you know, the plants, as the seeds are spread on the air, a whole lot of them hit pavement, doesn't work. Hard to grow on pavement, but some make it. Hmm. And the natural selection and the evolution of the genes happens. That's just how it happens. I mean, it's just the way it is. And I have zero sympathy for people who say, well, I can't fail. what if I say, well, then, you know, it's like one guy said to me, I said, fail fast, fail cheap. He says, okay, I really can't say that. True story. He says, could we say learn fast, learn cheap? I said, no, fail. He said, I can't say that. I said, you have psychological problems that I can't help you. I mean, you truly have psychological problems. And I'm sorry, that's beyond the scope of my knowledge base. You should get professional help. I'm serious. I mean, this is not a joke. It's not just a fun slogan. Fail faster and you will get there quicker.
Okay. Well, I think that's as strong as we can get that message out. Tell me about the Vermont toddy, our craft cocktail recipe. Is this an original or is this one that's been around?
Yeah. No, this is an original. Okay. So I've always wanted, you know, through this winter, and I figured I may as well get this out before spring gets too much further in here. Got to get this hot drink out, you know, for the winter. Should have done it earlier. But I've always wanted to have a toddy that was a good toddy. And I've tried and tried and tried. And I've done complicated ones. And usually they're pretty thin. Chef Phil, who works for the distillery, came up with a recipe using tea that was good. It was good, but I didn't like the caffeine in it, and you know, and the non-caffeinated tea didn't work, and I kept playing with it, and then I made just a simple switch. Classically, you use honey or sugar, a sugar cube. Sugar cube common, honey's common, and you'll use all kinds of different flavors, and you'll put different things in, and you'll put in spices, and I went the spice route with all kinds of spices. And then I had some friends from Vermont here, and I started joking about we'll make a Vermont toddy. And so we took, and it's in the show notes, but 3/4 ounce of maple syrup, you know, good Vermont maple syrup, 3/4 ounce of lemon juice, 1.5 ounces in this case of our Keelboat whiskey, and then 3 ounces of boiling water. And so if you add that up, it's about 50% water, 50% other stuff. And suddenly in place of all of the spices and all that kind of stuff, that good quality maple syrup, you know, the real stuff, really gave me the backbone that I was looking for in it. And finally, after dozens and dozens of tries, I got a toddy that I really enjoy on a cold winter's night.
Okay. And just so you don't get in trouble, is there a Canadian toddy?
Well, you could do the same there, but these are my friends, so I'm going to keep it there for them.
Okay. All right. Very
Lois,
good.
Lois, this one's for you, the Vermont toddy, so in your memory, and Sue Hogan, too. So.
Okay. All right. So failing fearlessly with the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy, it was it's this whole theme of failing and being able to laugh about it and have fun with it.
Until we talk about it again and again and again and again.
Okay.
Because it is the root issue for most people. I'd love to do it, but I'm just scared. Hmm. Well, let's do something.
Because we appreciate you as a listener, we are offering for a limited time 4 things. A 1 hour abridged audio of the Driving Eureka book. A subscription to the Driving Eureka newsletter, which contains weekly advice from Doug Hall on how to find, filter, and fast track big ideas. And the newsletter has other offers that are not made public. The Driving Eureka prescription for success. You answer questions and we'll help you assess your ability to find, filter, and fast track big ideas. And you get advice on how to grow your ability to innovate. And the last item, access to a Doug Hall interview with a radio legend. To get these offers, go to www.doughall.com/podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the Driving Eureka podcast on iTunes.